Normally, I'd just put us back on record, but since there was no recording, I'm going to rule that this was a false start, and I am going to welcome everyone to the February 19, 2015 meeting of the House Agriculture and Natural Resources. We are convened. Good morning to everyone. We're going to be hearing three bills this morning. The first one will be House Bill 2641, and I'm going to open a public hearing on that bill. Mr. Gallagher, could you please tell us what that bill entails?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill establishes a requirement of minimum care and protection from injury for animals awarded as prizes and creates fines and penalties.
Thank you very much. And with that, I would like to ask to come forward, please, Representative Gomberg. And, sir, I don't know if there's anyone else in the audience that you wanted to invite up with you, but good morning and welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And I know there's a number of people that wanted to comment to you this morning, but I'm just going to go ahead and lead off. For the record, David Gomberg from House District 10 on the Central Oregon Coast, here to talk about 2641. And the impetus for this measure is an event that's been occurring in Lane County. And someone was scheduled to come from Lane County and describe that in detail for you. But rather, since they were unable to attend, I guess I would ask you to use your imaginations a little bit. The event in Lane County entailed turning a number of rabbits loose in an arena, and then turning a number of children loose in that same arena. And if they catch one of the rabbits, they get to keep it. And I think you can kind of imagine the kind of entertainment, if I could use that phrase. If I could use that phrase at all, that might ensue from the activities in the arena and the kind of injuries that might result to both the animals and the children. But the activities in the arena are really not what this bill is about. This bill is about responsible pet ownership, because the results of this event in Lane County really took place in the weeks that followed it, and that is that most of the animals, the majority of the animals, ended up in shelters. They were taken home as prizes. Then they were returned to local animal shelters. And those are the ones that were returned to shelters. There's also some evidence a number of them were just simply cut loose, resulting in feral colonies of animals in the area, an increasing problem that we see in Oregon. So the bill before you addresses those particular points, some minimal treatment of care for the animals during the event, but more importantly, verifying that the people that win these prizes know what they're getting into, that they're taking on the responsibility of a pet and they have some sense of what kind of responsible care would result. And then finally, providing that that should they choose not to keep the animal they just won, that there's a process to return it where it came from. A fairly simple concept that has since generated a great deal of discussion. So let me say, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am open to any kind of changes, any kind of adjustments, any kind of discussion that may go forward here. Some people have suggested to me that we need to change this bill and exclude fish. Fine. I'm just fine with that. Some people have suggested that this event infringes on other kinds of activities, such as greased pig competitions, that we might put a weight limit on the size of animal that can be won in these events. Fine. I am open to that conversation. Some people have suggested to me that that this would infringe on events where frozen birds are awarded as prizes, such as turkey shoots, where you win a frozen turkey, and that this is precluding people from winning frozen turkeys. It hadn't occurred to me that animals as such would involve frozen turkeys, or that we had to instruct people in their proper care when you take them home or provide an opportunity to return them. But fine, I am open to adding the words live animals to all of this. And I know that you've received a written testimony from the Oregon Humane Society regarding the problem that are created in shelters around the state from these types of events. I also know that you've received some, or will be receiving some information from Oregon's veterinarians who have some concerns about adjusting this, and I am open to conversations with them. I am certainly not looking to infringe on fine programs around the state operated by 4-H and others that provide animals with prizes and good educational opportunities with kids. I am not looking at a slippery slope. I am not looking at a camel trying to stick its nose under the tent. intent. I'm simply trying to deal with responsible pet ownership and preventing injuries to these animals during the competition and then creating a larger problem after the fact when they go home and surprise the new family that just came in with a new bunny. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the essence of where I'm at. I think there'll be some interesting conversation, and I think we can fine-tune this and make it an excellent bill for you. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much, Representative Gomberg. I didn't realize that when the family gathers for Thanksgiving dinner that there was a consideration of animal cruelty when we all dive into the butterball. So thank you for making that distinction here. We'll be careful that we don't cross any lines here. Representative Krieger, Vice Chair Krieger.
I took my rabbit home and ate it.
Well,
Mr. Chairman, I didn't hear a question, so I'm happy to.
please refrain. And I would like to have a bipartisan standoff here because the witch doctor won't tell his story if our guest doesn't tell his Sunday school story. So time out on this right now. So thank you very much. Any questions or comments for Representative Gomberg? Yes, Representative Escobar.
Mr. Chair, obviously this isn't ready for prime time, which has been the suggestion here. So I would suggest that maybe you as the chair would appoint some sort of a work group to work out these details in conjunction with the representative.
Well, a good suggestion. I understand that there are a couple of amendments that have been proposed, and Representative, I don't know if those are your amendments or they are someone else's who would likely be following you.
Mr. Chairman, in the back of the room, I saw some new amendments that I had not seen before. I think the -1s and the -4s. We had certainly prepared some information for the pleasure of the committee if they wanted to consider it, with a few of the points that I touched on. So I think if a work group is convenient for all of you, I would be happy to take part in that.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much for that. Anything further for our colleague?
Yeah.
Yes, please, Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Yes, looking at the -1 and the -4 that I just went over, it looks like the original bill was specifically intended to handle the -1, and then the -4 was looked a lot more like the original bill, and you and I have had this conversation, but I'm just wondering if this bill shouldn't be addressed at a local level for the local concern I think that's established here.
And Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I've just seen the -1 amendments. I think that limiting it to rabbits and limiting it to Lane County is limiting it too much, my perspective, respectfully. I think in Lane County, on one occasion, they did change the event, and instead of chasing rabbits, they used chickens, an easy change that still creates and leaves us with the same kinds of problems. Respectfully, I'd like to see statewide policy addressing this problem, but addressing it narrowly enough to focus it on the problem and nothing more.
Very good. Yes, Representative McEwen.
But a brief comment. I'm having this visual picture of my 6-year-old daughter at the Lapine Rodeo when they were doing a scramble. She caught a goose, and she wrestled it all the way across the arena at great peril to herself. She was bruised and battered, and the best thing that happened is she got to the gate and it got away. And I didn't have to bring it home in my car.
Representative Whitzer.
In my district in Eastern Oregon, of course, the concern is that this relates to greased pig contests, which are a big part of the rodeos and the fairs. We have an awful lot of little kids that is like the highlight of their year outside of Christmas is the greased pig contest. And I will say in my many years of seeing them, I have seen many children injured, but I have never seen one of these greased pigs injured. And so I think one of the things we need to talk about is maybe a weight limit on the animal so that if it's 15 pounds or larger, something like that, that,
there's an amendment that has a weight.
You know, it will withstand a six-year-old and probably do some mighty damage to a six-year-old, but that's up to the parents to decide. So anyhow, that's just where my district is this is a time-honored old tradition. They love it. The kids love it. And so far, no injured pigs, but little kids with knocked-out teeth and stuff. So anyhow, thank you.
Thank you
very
much.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Whitsett, I think I addressed that in my comments. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the levity that we've experienced here this morning, and I think that's always a healthy thing here in the Capitol. But of course, it is a serious issue and a serious concern, and I look forward to pursuing it further.
Thank you very much, and I share your concern that animals not be awarded without considerations of the welfare of the animal, either in the process of winning it or post, and its welfare going forward. So thank you very much for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
I'd like to call forward, please, Glenn Cole. Oh, excuse me. Yes, Senator and Representative, what's it?
No, not on this one.
No, on a different bill, I think.
Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Chair Witt. For the record, I'm Doug Whitsett, representing Senate District 28. Mr. Chair, it's my understanding that the genesis of this bill may have been the alleged injury or inappropriate care of rabbits, which Representative Gomberg has discussed, during some sort of rabbit scramble in Lane County. And if that's what the problem is, then the Dash 1 amendment focuses on that problem. It's also my understanding that an ordinance has been offered in Lane County that failed to pass to address this problem. If the problem is rabbits in Lane County, the Dash 1 amendment addresses that specific issue. If it's chickens, it could be added to the amendment. But if the purpose is to curtail traditional events at county fairs and rodeos, this bill is a solution in search of a problem. During 30 years of veterinary practice working many county fairs, rodeos, and roping events, I have yet to identify that a problem exists. And I do admit I have never, provided veterinary oversight to a rabbit scramble, and I have never provided veterinary oversight in the Willamette Valley. But I strongly oppose House Bill 2641 as it's introduced. I think it would have a very negative effect on a lot of traditional. It has potential to have a negative effect on a lot of traditional rodeo events, roping events, you name it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for the good senator? I'm seeing none.
Thank you.
Thank you so very much. With that, I'd like to invite forward Glenn Cole, please, and if you have anyone else that you would like to accompany you.
No.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Glenn Cole. I'm the executive director with the Oregon Veterinary Medical Association. We're a membership-based group across all counties in Oregon, about 1,000 members, and we represent practitioners in mixed animal, pet medicine, large animal, food production, agriculture, research, and industry. Our board this past Sunday looked at the wide array of animal-related bills, as well as many other business-related bills that have an impact on the veterinary profession. And with House Bill 2641, we did adopt a motion to not support it as written because we had concerns it was a bit overly broad. It actually, for us, raised more questions than provided some answers. With the amendment that Representative Gomberg had mentioned, especially the one about weight size, I think that answers or is helpful for us to address one of our more major concerns. It doesn't move the dial completely for us. Certainly, we would have to have the opportunity to give a broader discussion with my more executive officers and boards on this, but it is helpful. And we did learn of the suggested amendments yesterday. I had a chance to see it late last night, so we're still somewhat digesting that. A couple of other concerns remain, though. For example, line 8 stipulates that minimum care must be provided to an animal or insured before it is awarded as a prize. And on the surface, that sounds good, but what does it really mean? In veterinary medicine, when a veterinarian is examining an animal, the only thing that veterinarian can attest to is the condition of that animal in front of the veterinarian. And he can't say, or she can't say with absolute certainty, how that animal was cared for or provided prior to coming for that exam. And he or she cannot attest to how that animal would be cared for afterwards. And yet the bill is kind of saying that whoever organizes these events and an animal is going to be participating in it, awarded as a prize, they must know how that animal, ensure that it's had minimum care. And it just seems impractical. If a veterinarian can't do that, often can't do that, how could an organized event? So it's just one of the concerns we have with that. We think it's a bit impractical. The other one is really about responsibility. The bill also allows the recipient up to 6 months to return an animal awarded as given as a prize or raffle. I did hear Representative Gomberg his comment on that, and I understand his concern. I think in veterinary medicine, we take responsibility pretty seriously. And those who have animals and care for animals, we have the responsibility to provide that care as etched out in statute in Oregon law, and we have the responsibility to also, if we can't provide that care, to relinquish that animal appropriately, find it a good home, return it, providing it to shelters, and we wouldn't want them to abandon those animals at all. At the same time, we are willing to work with the proponents of HB 2641 to work out an acceptable bill. We realize that all parts of this, some of the bill as written, is concerned for us as a profession. Others may not be, but we want to address those that do involve us, and we would welcome that opportunity.
Thank you very much. Appreciate the Veterinarian Association's appearance here. Thank you. Questions or comments, committee members? I'm not seeing any. I think you were here for Representative Gomberg's testimony, and would you be willing to work with him to design a bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very, very much. Appreciate that. Is there anyone else from the public who would like to testify on House Bill 2641 this morning? Please. Good morning, Jim.
Chair Witt, committee members, Jim Welsh representing Oregon Cattlemen Association. And we're kind of in protective mode here, as we have been before, for reasons of events within our areas, and that would be the rodeo event. Uh-huh. And looking at the language and everything, we wouldn't be supportive as written. And for certainly reasons that Senator Whitsitt and Representative Whitsitt were concerned about also. And I did talk to Representative Gomberg, and if you put together a work group around this for deciding on some maybe better language, we would like to participate. But I just think that I am also, side note, a resident of Lane County.
Yes.
I've never seen this event. Uh-huh. So I think that the care of the animal is a concern, but when you have an event like this, and Representative Gomberg mentioned that some of those animals could be returned to shelters, and not given the proper care by the particular owner that runs them, that's possibly a concern too. But we do not want it to infringe on rodeo events, where there are certainly those type of precautions taken to protect the animals and maybe not the contestants, but animals for sure. So thank you.
Thank you very, very much. I think you've indicated that you'd be willing to help with this. Appreciate that offer. Anything for the witness?
Seeing none, Jim, thank you very, very much. Last and final call, testimony on House Bill 2641. Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2641 and open a public hearing on House Bill 2503. Mr. Gallagher?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the bill vests would vest sole authority to regulate hunting ammunition and fishing gear with the Legislative Assembly, with specified exceptions, authorize the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to regulate by rule caliber of firearm and number of rounds in firearm when hunting certain species.
And I'm going to invite up Senator Steiner Hayward, please.
Thank you. If there are other legislators, they're welcome to join me. We may be on different sides.
Okay, we'll take your testimony and
thank
then
you,
let you get on with your business this
thank
morning.
Thank you, Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, State Senate, Oregon District 17, and a family physician. And you may ask, why am I here testifying on this bill? And I will tell you that it's because I'm concerned about lead toxicity. And as a physician, I am well aware that lead toxicity in humans has been documented for literally thousands of years. And as a result, our country has made its decision to remove lead from various paints, gasoline, pipes, and other items that we come in contact with on a daily basis to protect human health as well as our environment. And the Centers for Disease Control, which is really the national arbiter of these kinds of issues, states that there's no safe level of lead exposure. Unfortunately, despite its known toxicity, lead exposure through hunting ammunition continues to pose a threat to humans and is likely the most unregulated form of lead use in the country. And while the effects are significant even for adults, we do see effects of lead toxicity in adults. It's particularly concerning for children, and young children are most at risk, where lead can cause irreversible damage to the brain and the nervous system, leading to behavioral problems, cognitive deficits, anemia, poor blood function, liver and kidney damage, hearing loss, hyperactivity. I could go on, but I think you get the point. In adults, it can cause muscle coordination problems, nerve damage to the sense organs, blood pressure problems, hearing and vision impairment, and reproductive problems. Now, why is this really an issue? The issue is because the vast majority of hunters in Oregon do exactly what they should be doing. They hunt for food, and that's great. That's exactly the right reason that people should be hunting. However, it has been shown that fragments from bullets can be found as far as 18 inches from the bullet exit hole inside the animal, entrance or exit hole inside the animal, and it is almost impossible to remove all the lead fragments from a bullet from game animals that have been shot. And therefore, when people consume game meat, they are likely to consume lead as well, making it a significant risk for lead toxicity in children. So, in fact, we are seeing that in venison, for example, a common game meat, we see increased levels of lead in people who consume venison on a regular basis. So in order to avoid the risk of lead exposure from ammunition, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife should have the opportunity to regulate this if the evidence becomes clear. That should not be left solely to the purview of the legislature. Agencies have historically been given the opportunity to make rules such as this when it becomes clear that it is in the public's best interest. We see this not just with Fish and Wildlife, but with the health authority, with the medical board determining about physician practice, and those are really the right times. There may be times when the legislature takes an interest in this and chooses to take action, but if the evidence become clear in between legislative sessions, or if it becomes clear that it needs to be dealt with in a different kind of public process, then allowing the agency the flexibility to do rulemaking will make a big difference. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for the senator? Yes, Representative Barreto, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. A lot of the shooting sports doesn't involve hunting, and so by banning lead ammo, you would be taking, I would say, the majority, and I don't know the numbers, but of ammunition, and subjecting it to a higher cost. you know, apart from just the purpose of hunting. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Brito, I'm very glad that you asked that question. I have no concerns particularly about lead ammunition used for shooting sports other than hunting. It's only hunting that I care about. That's the only place that I think we need to be concerned about lead ammunition. I completely agree with you. It would be inappropriate to be concerned and put people who practice shooting sports at higher cost by banning lead ammunition in that context. It's entirely hunting that I'm concerned about, sir.
Okay. Follow up, please.
Okay. And going into a different arena, if there is ammunition right now that is available that is not lead-based, would you find it appropriate for the person knowing the potential harm of lead, just like warning on a cigarette package, to say, look, you do this at your own risk?
I think that informing the public, excuse me, Mr. Chair, Representative Barreto, my apologies. You raise an important point, and I certainly believe in informing consumers as much as possible. And the more we can do to educate the public about the risk of lead, the better. And I don't think many people are aware. So certainly one of the first steps we should consider taking, and we should be very clear about this, is putting that warning on boxes of ammunition and saying, here are your options. That being said, I'm not sure that's going to be sufficient, and I don't think it's proven sufficient for cigarettes, although we haven't banned cigarettes, and I'm not sure we should. Banning substances doesn't generally work for keeping people from using them. So I'm not sure it's entirely analogous, but I absolutely agree that educating people as much as possible is an important part of this conversation.
Thank you. Additional comments? I'm seeing none. Senator, thank you very, very much.
Thank you, Chair Webb. Thank you, members of the committee.
Appreciate you being able to join our committee this morning.
Happy to do it. Thanks for being with you.
And with that, I'd like to call forward, please, the bill sponsors. Senators and Representative Whitsett, along with the Stand Steele, please. Good morning to each of you.
Good morning. I'll start. Good morning, Chair Witt, Co-Chairs McLean and Krieger. I'm Representative Gail Whitsett. I represent House District 56, which is the southern half of Klamath and Lake counties to the California border. Senator and I live 12 miles from the California border. This morning, I bring to you House Bill 2503, which makes the regulation of lead in ammunition, fishing gear, and sporting equipment a legislative function. The genesis of this bill came from interim committee hearings in Ag and Natural Resources and Energy and the Environment, where you heard about the request for introduction of certain endangered birds, specifically the carrion-eating condor, into Northern California by the Yurok tribe. We were presented testimony in committee that Curry, Jackson, Josephine, and Klamath counties are within the farthest flight range of this bird from its proposed introduction site in California. Certain raptors and condors eat carrion, which is the dead bodies of other animals, and as such may be subject to ingestion of whatever may be in those consumed bodies. There is a suggestion that condors are not surviving due to ingesting the lead from ammunition shot in gut piles of hunted animals. There certainly is not a great deal of reproducible scientific proof that this is the case with condors. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, who is introducing the species in conjunction with some administrative branch agencies of several states, not ours at the present time, have asked for a ban by hunters of lead in ammunition in these bird introduction areas. In other states, local counties have restrictions on lead in hunting ammunition, and we do not want to see this in Oregon, for example, the Vermilion Cliffs area of Arizona. As I understand this, presently 6 gauges of shotgun shells used for hunting birds have a lead ban in them. Instead, they have steel shot. However, there are there are several dozen calibers of rifles. I read 83. Which sounds like a lot, but which presently use lead-based ammunition, and not to mention black powder and antique guns, which are often used in competition. The cost of trying to substitute another metal for the lead, as in copper or stainless steel, would be prohibitively expensive if hunters could even find copper or steel bullets in bulk. We're proposing a bill that would prevent administrative branch agencies or other bodies from making decisions on banning lead, either by executive order, administrative rule, or county or city rule in the state of Oregon, and leaving the decision to our legislative body only. The importance of this cannot be overstated, as only through the legislative process is a decision open to public input and consideration. The legislative process is transparent. There are no closed-door deals by special interest groups, agencies, or individuals. And I'd just like to say a lot of people are really worried. We've received emails about mortality of raptors, the carrion-eating birds. And I just wanted to bring this up. Major statistically viable examples of mass mortality events for raptors and other birds are those found in wind farms. Data from the Wildlife Reporting Response Team show just one wind farm in California, the Altamont Pass, with 800 carcasses of these beautiful birds within 94 feet of 100 kilowatt turbines of at least 81 feet in height. Not included in this data for a time period of 5 years were 347 raptor carcasses plus 21 golden eagles, which were found catapulted outside of the range, but which exhibited sliced off heads from the turbines. Many are also not even found because the carcasses were removed prior to the official scheduled search. An estimated 39 million birds a year are killed by wind turbine farms in these massive green energy wind facilities, according to the paper by CFACT, which is written by Jim Wiegand, an independent wildlife expert and vice president of Save the Eagles International. So I contend that when we're talking about birds, wind farms are a much bigger problem, and they also mention condors in there than bullets are. So I really urge an aye vote on this. I think we have some amendments that Stan's going to talk about that relate to commercial versus private hunting and fishing. And so I defer to my other panelists there. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'm, for the record, Senator Doug Whitsett, representing District 28 in the Oregon Senate. Mr. Chair, House Bill 2503 is a pro-hunting measure that we believe may be critically important to most Oregon sportsmen. Current hunting and angling statutes and administrative rules are so extensive and often so convoluted that many of us are never quite certain whether we're hunting and fishing legally or not. Thankfully, all of those extensive rules and regulations are created by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, a single entity, so you can go to one source to find all the rules and regulations. The ODF&W rules and regulations are authorized by statute enacted by the Oregon Legislative Assembly. Mr. Chair, I strongly believe that this Legislative Assembly actually has the mental capacity to give the Department of Forests, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, guidance. I don't believe that the Fish and Wildlife should be making policy. That is the role of the Legislative Assembly, to make policy. The department is supposed to follow that policy. So I absolutely reject the idea that we should hand off this responsibility to the department. It is our responsibility. At least we are able to obtain, read, and assimilate all of the myriad rules and regulations from that single agency. We can only imagine the confusion and uncertainty that would undoubtedly result in the event that counties, cities, and other state agencies began creating multiple layers of additional hunting and angling rules and regulations. Under current law, that nightmarish situation is possible. ORS 166.170 preempts local jurisdictions from regulating firearms in any manner, but it does not adequately preempt local jurisdictions from regulating the kind of ammunition that can be used in firearms. House Bill 2503 voids any ordinance or regulation created by cities, counties, and government agencies that would regulate the kind of ammunition used in that jurisdiction. That, I believe, is something for the legislature. It's a policy the legislature should decide, and whatever the legislature should decide should be a law, not a local jurisdiction. The measure does the same for the purchase, sale, possession, or use of fishing gear, angling equipment, or fishing tackle. We believe that allegations of harm caused by ingestion of lead bullets is at best inaccurate, if not intentionally misleading. In my more than 30 years of veterinary practice, I have yet to find a single bullet in the stomach of a single farm dog or cat, both that are significant consumers of carrion. Not one. Believe me when I say that a lead bullet shows up on a radiograph like a blinking neon light. It's just a white thing on the, you know, you can't possibly miss it. While I have learned in my many years of veterinary practice that anything is possible, I do not believe ingestion of lead bullets to be a measurable cause of lead poisoning. I'm not a statistician, but I do know that it does not change my chance of winning on each ticket if I purchase multiple lottery tickets. Likewise, it would seem that even if 1% of carrion did contain lead bullets, which I very much doubt, the odds of a raptor consuming that one carcass would remain the same 1%, no matter how many carcasses that raptor consumed. The odds of encountering a carcass with a lead bullet remain at the same 1%, no matter how many carcasses that bird encounters. For these reasons, I strongly question the statistical significance of any claim that the odds of consuming a lead bullet are somehow cumulative. In my opinion, further regulation of lead bullets would serve little more than to create more anti-hunting rules. In the unlikely event that evidence ever shows that regulation could be advantageous, the Legislative Assembly is quite capable of creating those regulations and is the body that should make those regulations. In a more perhaps selfish mode, like many Oregonians, I have a significant supply of ammunition. And with the exception of shotgun shells, all of that ammunition stockpile is lead ammunition. I do not want to see that stockpile of ammunition made illegal to use. Mr. Chair and committee members, we urge you to adopt this measure and to send it to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Witt, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Stan Steele, representing the interest of thousands of Oregon outdoorsmen.
Good morning.
From the Oregon Outdoor Council. What I just heard was the exact point that I really want to make this morning. You just heard two excellent discussions, how this chamber and the Senate have the ability to make good governance for Oregon. I think that's why we support this bill the way it's written. This is where we make major decisions on Oregon's way of life, economy, and even how we manage. There's four chapters that deal with wildlife management in our Oregon revised statutes, 496, 497, 498, and chapter 501. The first three chapters specifically deal with the sport of hunting and fishing. Chapter 501 deals specifically with the commercial aspect of our wildlife, specifically fish. Those bills, those laws all originated in these chambers. They did not originate at the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Often they did through ideas brought to them by the public. But many of them are restrictions on what the agency can do. I think that if you look at 496.012, which is the wildlife policies for the state, you'll see it's clearly outlined what their obligations are and their limitations. So the bill is a good bill. We need to tighten it. We need to refocus it on making sure that it is a sport recreational bill. Fishing is a commercial term. I know it's widely used in our sports of field magazines or whatever it may be, but fishing is commercial. Angling is sport. That definition is 501 to 496. Those chapters are specific. So we can clear that easily. That's just a wordage. But I heard some information this morning that troubled me. And why it troubled me was it said that we, as hunters, have a higher lead ingestion rate there was an extensive study done in South Dakota. That South Dakota study had hundreds of hunters. Hunters have a lower lead level than if you're just to take someone off the street. That research is there. We can provide it and be very willing to provide it. So when I hear those conflicting arguments, I start trying to ask, what science are we using? Where is the science coming from? Because what caused the California style regulation to occur after they did initiate a ban in a California condor zone? And after several years of that ban being in place, and their lead toxicity level in condors was not reduced when there was no hunting bullets being utilized, calls into question, where were the condors getting the lead? Was it really from lead ammunition? Or are there other sources out there that we've yet to identify? That's the Oregon question. And that's the question that I think these chambers are going to deal with. Let's have our scientists do work that's specific to the Oregon geography. We hunt from the desert to the high mountains. I mean, the coastal forests are quite different than the Baja. We need to make sure our science follows the concern. Cannot make good policy on bad science. Those two just don't go together. There was a symbiosis from a wildlife conservation gentleman by the name of Sanford Sandy Wilbur, one of the original guys that was working on the California condor issue. And Sandy says this: the Center for Biological Diversity repeatedly conflated the Arizona and California information, their data, to build their case for a lead ban. We're better than that in these chambers. And that's why we feel 2503 does not restrict ODFW or our commission's ability to act. It allows you to provide the oversight, the governmental oversight, to make sure that good policy is what rules the day. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Questions or comments? Representative Frederick, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It took me about four clicks to search through Google to find enough of about six pages of bibliography detailing the impact of lead on a variety of organisms. Condors, human, kids. Also to find, and it took me very little time, to find a number of scientific studies that are very clear about how lead ammunition has an impact on that particular environment. I'm sitting here in front of me right now. I can send it to you if you'd like for me to. As I said, this was just a couple of quick clicks. Had no time, no problems at all finding this. Scientists, as a rule, want to challenge one another, mm-hmm. as regarding results. But when there appears to be not just a clear or an abiding consensus on a number of things, then you begin to say, well, maybe they're onto something here. I am concerned that comments regarding the scientific studies are not clear to me, that there's not other motivation behind it. A lot of the conversation, a lot of the comments I've heard is that environmentalists or people who don't want hunting are trying to stop hunting, and that's the motivation behind this. The other side says that hunters just want to hunt, and please don't stop us. We want to do whatever we want to do. Neither one of those, I think, are appropriate. So I am concerned about that. Let's take a look. If you want to look at the science, let's really take a look at the science. Let's not pull specific articles out. And I was able to find, within a very short period of time, a significant literature suggesting that this is a concern and it is something we need to be concerned about. So I just want to say that because the idea that the science is confirming one side or the other is a struggle for me because it's not. I will say that it's leaning in my view in just this quick look, and it's not just the environmental journals. It's National Geographic, or it's the EPA. It is the CDC. It is U.S. Geological Survey. It is a whole series of folks, journals, environmental pollution. Yes, you know, you can challenge that if you'd like, but there are enough journals that speak to these particular issues and dismissing them on the idea that no one is actually paying attention to them or that they are not valid concerns me.
Chair Witt, Representative Frederick, I do not believe anybody with any knowledge of toxicity believes that lead is not toxic. That's a given. Science is not a consensus-driven instrument. Science is a statistically significant, reproducible, science-driven instrument. So I certainly agree with you that you can find the whole gamut of scientific reports relating to lead and lead toxicities and its occurrence on the Internet. What I would ask this committee to do is look at the statistical confidence of each of those particular scientific reports. And if they don't have at least a 95%, even a 90% level of statistical significance, or in fact, if they don't even mention the statistical significance, I would urge you to put them in the trash can. There are good science, and good science is peer-reviewed, reproducible, and is statistically significant. There is a huge volume of science out there on every subject, and you can certainly pick and choose and make them whatever you want, but the good science has certain characteristics.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I will continue to study. I can. It is. Pardon me,
please.
Mr. Chair. The Journal of Wildlife Management article that I'm just looking at, just the title, is an interesting one. Blood level leads of common ravens with access to big game offal. The lead poisoning in upland foraging birds of prey in Canada, exotoxicology, environmental science technology, ammunition is the principal source of lead accumulated by California condors reintroduced into the wild. This is a 2006 article by Church. And my point, and there's a CDC report as well on these on low-level lead exposure. My point is that the science that is present right now, and this is just the bibliography from one article, okay? This is not, I haven't done an extensive report. I do not plan on giving an extensive report. Because I know how much time that would take. But these are issues that I think we need to be concerned about, and I think we need to be concerned about them in a way that is different than just saying we need to have a political discussion of the science. I would prefer to have the ODF&W taking a look at this rather than because they do have scientists on board to do that. Despite the fact that the two of you have that background, and there are a few other folks with scientific background in the legislature, very few. Others are not do not have that background, and I would be concerned about the legislature trying to make decisions related to this kind of thing. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I can respond, I certainly, you make good points. Getting back to the purpose of this bill, the purpose of this bill is to make certain that the legislature looks at all the science and creates the appropriate policy for our agencies to follow. As the gentleman beside me just mentioned, they have determined that there are increased lead levels in condors. Okay, that may be statistically significant. But when you find out that those lead levels in the condors have not decreased after several years of ban of lead ammunition, then it becomes blaming lead ammunition becomes an anecdotal thing that is no longer supportable. And this bill talks about banning, talks about the regulation of lead ammunition. So we're not talking about the broader talk. The broader, I think we're getting out in the weeds here. We're not talking about the broader. The broader subject of lead toxicity, we're talking about specifically what effect lead bullets may have on that, and I think the legislative body is a place to make those decisions. That's just my opinion.
Well, I would like to see that article particularly because I'd like to check to see whether there was an understanding of how long lead stays in a body, which it does stay for some time, and whether there was any indication of how it was, whether it was in young condors or new condors who had been introduced. I'd like to see that. And the specific concerns are not just bullets, but they're talking about fragments, and the fragmentation that can take place as well is one of the concerns that I keep hearing. So I would like to, if you could find that article, I'd love to see it, and if you could get it to me, I'd really appreciate that. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, one further comment: if you're really concerned about lead being a problem in condors, you certainly would just simply X-ray some of the carcasses of the dead condors, because fragments of a lead bullet or an entire lead bullet would stand out even in a completely, almost totally decomposed carcass of the raptor or a condor. You would find the signatures right there from an X-ray.
Thank you very much. Vice Chair Krieger, followed by Vice Chair McClain.
As we've heard, you can probably validate any position you want to take if you look on the internet long enough. I'm not able to look on the internet, period, because I don't use computers, and a lot of people don't know that. I put most everything up here. But I don't have an opportunity to question the author about how did he come to the conclusions. So I really don't look at a lot of the things that are written material unless I can get the name of it and then look it up separate. You mentioned the study, and it was in the information given to us, and I wanted to read it because you referenced the CDC. A study from 2008 by the U.S. Center for Disease and Control and Prevention, CDC, on blood lead levels of North Dakota hunters confirmed that consuming game harvested with traditional ammunition does not pose a human risk factor. And looking more closely at the CDC study results, perhaps the most telling is the fact that the average lead of hunters tested was lower than the average American citizen. Well, you can believe that or not believe it. I can't question anybody, but it is one of the things we need to take into consideration. And we've talked about all this lead. Remember the prior testimony on the meeting about lead in the gut piles. I don't know about hunters around the rest of the country. We don't shoot animals in the guts. And if you did, the bullet would go through. There might be some fragments in there. Also, if you look at the paunch or the gut pile of an animal, not the solid structure of flesh and bone, that gut pile dissipates extremely quickly. Usually within a week, you can't even find it on the ground. It's gone. It's been eaten by whatever. Or it disappears and dries up and goes away. So I think what the senator and the representative are trying to do isn't to say that lead isn't bad for us or that it can't cause problems with health. It's that it's up to us to decide how we're going to regulate it, not some other entity.
Vice Chair McClain, followed by Representative Gorsuch.
My question was really answered. I look at what we've been told today, and we can have a panel on lead poisoning, and we can have a panel on lead use, and we can have a panel on all scientific issues about lead. And it's the use of lead in pencils. We don't want our children eating those pencils. But what I'm hearing today is that this panel is asking that the policy be made at the level of the legislature versus policy be made where there may not be a public process. Is that correct?
Correct.
And so I'm interested in that discussion because I think that discussion makes a difference with what we have in front of us today. So I thank you for that.
Thank you very much. Representative Gorsuch, please.
To any of the panel. My question is somewhat similar to Representative McLean's. Is there currently something that you've identified in the process that ODFW uses now that seems askew, that there's some problem with the way policy is being decided on this topic, and is that why you're asking that it move to the legislature, or is it something entirely different?
I'll just say that I think the process in the legislature is so much more open because we have these committee hearings, mm-hmm. and we bring our evidence forward. We have the public is allowed full input into the process, and I think that is so much better than we go onto the floor and we debate this and we debate it in our caucuses and it's debated and debated. And so for me, that is the genesis of this, that some kind of rule, either for or against, is made behind closed doors in a process that isn't really readily available. I mean, this is the sort of thing that gets the public involved. I mean, the public has a say either for or against. And if a rule is being made somewhere by someone that we can't necessarily identify, and this could be a city council or a county commission somewhere or whatever. I mean, I just think we need to have the openness, and you might argue, yes, that is open, and I agree, but sometimes the agencies come forward with things that aren't always, we don't always know about them until it's too late, if you will, and then we as legislators get something in the mail that says, a constituent said, gee, I noticed this happened, and as you know, we all get lots and lots of emails about rules that are being made. So my thought is to make this open so the public can have their say in it, too. So that's, it's a transparency thing for me, is what this bill is about.
Senator Chair, Representative Gorsuch, Oregon agencies either create or amend about 11,000 administrative rules every year. It's a little shocking, but that's the truth. Sometimes they have rules advisory committees, and sometimes they don't. Even when they do have a rule advisory committee, it depends on who is appointed to that committee as to what the response comes out. The public almost always, I believe always, has a comment period. Whether the agency chooses to address the comments or not is up to the agency. So it's really not a very transparent process. From my perspective, one of the greatest problems that we have in our government is that we have ceded the responsibility to make policy to agencies, and that is the primary reason we're sitting here today, is to make policy for the state of Oregon. Not the agencies, but the legislature. Thank you.
Okay. I certainly hear what you're saying there. The thing that has concerned me for a long time is that we take public input in a lot of situations, but then there's no guarantee that we really act on that. And so I see your concern there. I really do. And there's a lot of different areas where that would be applicable. I also see... I understand the concern, too, about lead and lead-based ammunition, but it looks like this is just where does the policy get made? And I think in an important case like this, it makes sense that it would be at the legislative level. My bias statement. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I thoroughly agree with the panel on many issues. I think that this legislative body
needs to make decisions because we're the only ones that's accountable to the public. What bureaucrat in this building is accountable to the public? They aren't. They work for the governor. That's it. If there is anyone, it's the department head, which in turn is appointed by the governor. But I don't know about you, but if I were governor, I know I could go out with all these people, 50-some thousand, and monitor what they're doing. It's just an impossible job. I would like to see the legislative oversight of this building, of this whole state, because we're the ones that answer to the public. We're the ones that go out and we get elected every 2 years. If we do our job, we keep it. If we don't, we go away. And I think that that's something that we should emphatically hold dear to us, that we are the ones that are responsible for what goes on in this building. Now, I'm going to ask every one of these panel, not only the panel, but also our committee here, how many, what was there, 11,000 administrative rules a year? How many notices did you ever get of that? I rest my case.
Stan and Senator, just want to establish your credentials. Stan, you are a former state police officer.
Yes, Chair Witt. I spent 25 years with the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division. I check literally thousands of deer and thousands of elk. And Representative Krieger brought up an excellent point, one that often is not really discussed because sometimes the people who are discussing it really don't understand, well, where we try to target our animals. We want quick, clean, immediate takings or killings. A paunch shot deer, paunch shot elk.
That's true.
Is traumatized. You track him for hours. Sometimes you lose him. But let's talk about a family hunting blacktail bucks in the Cascade Mountains. We drive up, we'll walk up a trail to a beautiful clear cut, early successional habitat. We look out and we see a nice buck deer. And the hunter lays down, gets a good rest, and hopefully one shot kills. And one shot kills don't occur by gut shooting them. So the animal's down. The animal goes out whole, probably 90% of the time in those situations. So what's left in the field is the paunch. And the paunch being oftentimes quite distant from the actual killed area. Contrary to what a lot of people have said, look at bullet ballistics and bullet retention. These bullets do not fragment to the point that the hams or the rear of the animal, if the animal is shot in the shoulder or right behind, which is the lung area's primary where we try to make sure we have efficient kills, you will not find lead in the hams. And so that's emotion. But the animal comes out whole. So what's left in the field for a raven, a corvid, or a coyote? Coyotes really do consume a lot of the offal that's left in the field. He's not consuming lead. I'm not saying there isn't lead ingestion by creatures, but fish and wildlife management is risk management. Everything we do in fish and wildlife enforcement or regulation building is assessing a risk. And the risk assessment is done at a population level. In other words, we understand that there can and are individuals that will have lead ingestion or have other incidents when we're doing other legal activities that will cause their demise. But we don't manage per individual. We manage per population. And that's exactly why the bald eagles recovered went from 12 nests in Ohio to over 221, a state that has 650,000 deer hunters using lead ammunition. So what I really think everyone has said here is this is an incredible policy discussion. That policy, this is the governing body of the state of Oregon. You give all of your panels, your commissions, your agencies their direction. We have to make sure that is reinforced on issues that can affect $17 million in Pittman Robinson funds. A recent research survey said we'll lose 46% of Oregon's hunters. We are at an all-time low in modern history. We're at 196,000 hunters now. We have an agency that's looking at $34 million in a deficit, with a projected deficit over the next 6 years of over $100 million. We are not identifying alternative sources of funding for that agency, but we certainly are willing to restrict a main source of funding through the science that is not totally clear. Science that's developing, and I think science should be developed by our department. Our agency should rely on Oregon science, not California science. So my request is, this bill is very positive about setting that course, and you have a choice or a chance to make sure that when this actually is heard in finality, to make the very best decision, because our wildlife and our health, public health, all depends on this issue. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Senator Whitsitt, you mentioned the potential very harmful effects of lead, and I have to assume that in order for that to be harmful to me or others, there needs to be some kind of ingestion or contact in order for that lethal effect to impact me.
Yes, Chair Witt, in response, you can carry a lead bullet around in your body forever and you're not going to get any lead toxicity out of it. You know, you may get an infection, but you're not going to get any lead toxicity. It, in order to have toxicity, it has to be in your gastrointestinal tract and have the intestinal juices and acids and so forth working on it in order to make it into an absorbable form. So the only issue is ingested lead, and certainly ingested lead can be lethal. So, but I, you know, I'm a veterinarian. Our practice area encompassed about a 50-mile circle in Modoc and Siskiyou County, California, Klamath and Lake in Jackson County, and then we had, you know, but from the standpoint of the small animals, dogs and cats and so forth, most of them are rural animals. They're you know, they do what rural animals are supposed to do. You know, they go out and eat whatever's out there, and you've seen the finest bred dog loves to roll and carry, and that's just what they do.
Among other things. So, yes. Anyways. Thank you very much. Stan and Senator, in both of your professional backgrounds, as well as Stan's leadership in one of the state's leading hunting organizations, I want to ask a couple of other questions. A game animal is shot and prepared for consumption. As I'm looking at that carcass, let's say this is a rifle shot. Can I readily ascertain where that animal was shot? Usually, vast majority of times.
Absolutely, Chair Witt. Absolutely, I can't imagine a lethal wound that wouldn't be observable.
Are we talking wound channels here? Are those readily observable?
Certainly, the entry wound is generally the size of the caliber, and the exit wound is anywhere from if the bullet exits, it will be anywhere from that big around to whatever. If it's like it's a 243, it's awesome, but You can't miss where the animal's been shot.
So as we're preparing that meat for consumption, is it customary, Stan, for hunters to consume bloodshot meat?
Chair Witt, committee members, no. Another point we have to remember is drive through your community, especially rural Oregon, and you'll see game processing signs. Mm-hmm. At many, many different rural butcher shops. So those animals are coming in, most generally scanned in a deer bag or an elk in elk quarter bags, and they'll go into the butcher. So that meat that is being processed there is obviously no longer available to any of our wildlife. And most butchers are very, very responsible about returning well-processed meat. I do butcher my own game, make my own sausage, huge stainless smokehouse and everything, and I'm very, very cautious. Because, well, we do recognize that lead has toxicity. But you can, in fact, see your bloodshot. You can actually see into your wound channel. And that's one reason, I think, when they did the CDC work, that they did not find an increased level of lead in hunter-ingested, hunter-harvested game.
And in fact, I don't know of anyone who consumes bloodshot meat. Now, to those animals that may be harvested by shotgun, pellets, is there an opportunity to observe in that carcass entry points of pellets?
Chair Witt, absolutely. It doesn't make any difference whether it's a rifle shot or a pellet shot. There's going to be an entry wound, and you can certainly trace that. And any time that I have prepared a duck or a goose for my family's table, I make certain that any pieces of lead are taken out of it, and the proper trim is accomplished.
And in fact, it may be fairly typical that entry points of any pellets have feather markers at those points of entry.
Absolutely.
Now, what happens, gentlemen, when you accidentally, you've missed a pellet, and you bite down on one?
What you did.
In that event, Mr. Chair, I have always spit it out.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate that. Stan, another further question. That wound channel from the rifle shot would contain either the whole bullet or the fragments, would it not?
Chair Witt, committee members, yes, it would. Getting just a little forensics background here. Say we have a illegal cow elk kill in the LC unit. Stan Steele, old call number was 2772. He gets a call to go to that scene to start an investigation. We see the cow up there on the hillside, and we work our way in. Now we're going to take some tools with us. We're field forensics officers. We're truthfully Oregon State Police's first line of field technicians. And so in goes my butcher gear, the same gear that I pack when I'm hunting, because it's the same type of field forensic tools that our forensic lab people would be using. And we're going to probe. We're going to probe that wound channel, because oftentimes where the animal's laying and the wound channel will give us where it was fired from. It might be 200 yards away, but you can find, and you'll see the laser stuff on the CSIs now, where they work lasers, so then go back. So wound channels are an incredible forensic tool for us to start working backwards to find our perp or our suspect. And so then we're going to go a step further, because what do we want to find? We want to find a lead bullet or a whatever bullet, copper if it's an all copper, because we're going to find rifling. Rifling now starts giving us a weapon that we can actually tie back forensically to a person. So all of this is gathered. So when we have a bullet that completely frags and blows apart, Nosler's not happy, because that's not what they intend them to do. They want them to retain maximum ballistic capabilities or coefficient. So some of the high-speed bullets do frag. There's a reason for those if you're hunting fur bear varmints, coyotes, whatever. But let's get back to the bullet that we're really talking about, the primary hunting bullet, the one that is used by hundreds of thousands of hunters. Those, if they perform the way they are designed, do not blow up. Now, oftentimes when they hit heavy bone, They will. But what we're talking about here is not every lead bullet causes or is going to be available in the environment. Just because it was fired does not mean that it is, will historically remain there. So I think that what we have to say is lead channel or bullet channels give us a real ability to see where our bullet went and remove that during a butchering process to make it less available for human consumption. And if it stays in the carcass, which many times on heavy-bodied animals, you will not have an exit, well, then that bullet isn't available unless that animal is totally lost.
Thank you very much. And a final set of questions, Stan. As a former state policeman, is it the purview of the state police or ODF&W or any other state agency to regulate guns in this state, or is it the state legislature?
It's in without a doubt that authority. Sole authority is in this building.
So this body regulates the guns. It's not a stretch, I don't think, that we would be regulating the projectiles as well.
Well, I think that when you look at we're maybe getting into some Second Amendment area here, but when you do look at some petitions that have been filed by some of the national groups that really want to see lead ammunition banned for whatever reasons it may be, you do start seeing ammunition trying to be separated from firearms, and I think that it would be almost ridiculous or even ludicrous to not understand that a firearm is not capable of being what it was designed to do without having the ammunition. So I think that they are so married that that discussion is a co-joined discussion. That sole authority, in our opinion, as hunters in Oregon and as gun owners, should entirely rest within this body.
Thank you very much. Committee members, anything final? With that, panel members, appreciate your testimony very, very much and your patience with all of our questions.
Thank you.
I'd like to announce that I can't get through this witness sheet and hear the last and final bill both today. My apologies for those who have showed up for House Bill 2446, but I am going to have to carry that bill over. And so anyone who's here for that purpose, you can decide whether you want to remain or not. With that, folks, going forward, I have a half hour here to complete testimony on this bill. I am going to have to limit each person's testimony to a maximum of 3 minutes in order for me to even be able to come close to get through all the remaining witnesses. And I ask that you work with me to accomplish that. Next, I'd like to invite up, please, Eileen Smith, Kathleen Dodge, and Scott Beckstead, please. Good morning to each of you and welcome. Please decide among yourselves the order that you will proceed.
Hi, I'm Eileen Smith. Thanks for taking the testimony. I am not a hunter. However, I do have antique hunting guns from family members. They work. I've been out skeet shooting once or twice, so what? I'm not a hunter. I have eaten food all my life that has been hunted food that has, you spit it out. Okay. Now, the reason I'm here, I'd like to quote Dietrich Bonhoeffer. First they came for the communists. I was not a communist, so I did not speak. Then they came for the socialists and the trade unionists. I was neither, so I did not speak out. Then they came for the Jews, but I'm not a Jew, so I did not speak out. And now they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. So even though I'm not a hunter, I am here to address this. I am very, very confused as to what is actually being amended on this bill and why it is being amended as such. Number three says, in it, unless prohibition, restriction, regulation pertains to hunting waterfowl, it's contradictory to the original bill. Second is notwithstanding, number four, notwithstanding subsections 1 and 3, the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, now that doesn't include the legislature, that's not an elected bunch of people, may regulate by rule the caliber of a firearm, so they are, it is possible for them to regulate firearms, and the number of rounds that may be in a firearm, again, that person is permitted to use when hunting certain species. How broad can we get? How broad, and it brings all the lack of responsibility of the legislature and throws it off on the State Department. Not that they're an evil thing, but that's not appropriate. It's not appropriate. I am very, very confused as to why it's being amended such. Does anyone have an answer for me?
That concludes your testimony.
That concludes my testimony, and I'm very, very confused, and I'd really like to know why.
Thank you very much. Who's next?
Chair Witt, members of the committee, my name is Kathleen Dodge. I live in Albany, and I have volunteered doing wildlife rehabilitation for about 3 years, and I'm an assistant curator at a wildlife center in Corvallis. I deal with wildlife issues every day. For the record, I have seen bald eagles that have been poisoned with lead, and you can actually confirm that through x-rays. It's not very hard. I strongly oppose HB 2503. I believe that the Fish and Wildlife Commission, right now they are regulating ammunition and fishing tackle based on sound science and research. They employ some of the best biologists. They go to Oregon State. They're extremely educated in their field. They're experts. And it shouldn't be left up to legislature to decide and make every regulation a possible partisan issue and base decisions on ideology rather than science and create unnecessary bureaucracy. ODFNW has already set common sense regulations on banning full metal jacket ammunition. It's been banned because it's very inhumane to use when you're doing large game hunting. It actually punctures through a deer like an ice pick. They can run away, and they can die later in agony after a few days after being wounded, and they're left to rot on a forest floor. That's not sport, that's not hunting, and that's why ODFW exists, is to, you know, to say this is not an appropriate ammunition to use in hunting. They also regulate tracer ammunition and exploding targets during the fire season. Obviously, that could create a fire hazard, so that's a safety issue that the Fish and Wildlife Commission overlooks and regulates. Some of these decisions and regulations were made with the input of hunters and anglers in Oregon. There's actually, you can look up, there's several muzzleloader restrictions that they asked hunters about. A lot of them put in their input. They said they wanted to keep it traditional, so they, you know, what type, I don't, there's no, yeah, anyway. So you can look that up. I can't really do that for you right now, sorry. And my main point is we can't really afford to let special interest groups dictate wildlife management. It should be up to experts, Oregon experts, spending their time and life's work on research and using peer-reviewed science is so important. There are several experts in their field. There's some scientists that I've talked to who have read this bill, and they do have several concerns about it. Some of them are hunters. You know, it's just that they are open-minded enough to listen to the science. And I would like to make the case for letting ODF&W do their job and keep fishing and hunting safe and ethical for all Oregonians for many generations to come.
Thank you very much. Scott, welcome. Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Witt, members of the committee. For the record, Scott Beckstead, Senior Oregon Director and Western Regional Director for the Humane Society of the United States, here to express our opposition to House Bill 2503. For the record, I was raised a hunter. I am a gun owner. My wife and I own handguns, shotguns, and rifles, and I guess, which leads me to the first point, the position of the Humane Society of the United States is that lead ammo should be phased out just for sport or just for hunting, and that the use of lead in target shooting, skeet shooting, and those types of sports really isn't at play here. What we're talking about is the discharge of toxic lead ammunition in the natural environment in by hunters. So my dad is still a very, very avid hunter. He hunts probably 6 months out of the year, and he and I had a conversation about this, and I asked him if using non-lead ammunition was a problem, and he told me, I stopped using lead ammunition a long time ago. It's not a big problem. It's not a significant cost increase, and I really don't have a problem with it. And I think if you talk to a lot of rank-and-file hunters, the cost of non-lead ammunition, or the cost of ammunition period, is but a very small piece of the hunting experience. I would also note that we have already passed a ban on the use of lead ammunition in hunting migratory waterfowl, and that happened many, many years ago. And this very same conversation took place. Was it a slippery slope? Does it, you know, impinge on the Second Amendment rights? We know now that that was a very important policy that was passed, and that migratory waterfowl populations have rebounded and are doing very well as a result of that. The toxic properties of lead are very well known. I would encourage you to look in that slick little folder I passed out, that there is a statement of scientific consensus signed by a number of respected scientists who all agree that that lead is toxic and that it does pose a risk. This is a problem in Oregon. You're going to hear testimony from Bob Salinger at Portland Audubon. You've heard Ms. Dodge talk about her experiences. We do know that large numbers of wild animals are coming in to these wildlife rehabilitation centers suffering from lead poisoning. To the issue in the bill, and that is the question of who should be regulating this. You know, 2 days ago we were in here talking about cougars, and it seems like we all agreed on both sides of that issue. We all agreed that, you know, wildlife policy decisions should be based on science. And we look to the commission and ODFW to make science-based decisions. And the problem with this bill is that it politicizes the science. And you've got a body in the commission whose job it is to listen to staff biologists and make the best decisions that it can for Oregon's wildlife based on science. And it's our position, the position of the Humane Society, that these decisions should be made by the commission, and that the voters should also have a say in wildlife management. Handing this policy issue just to the legislature subjects it to politics, and it's a decision that should be made based on science, and that science is well-founded. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much. Representative Escobel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You were saying that there's not much difference in price when it comes to
lead versus some alternative type of an ammunition, and I don't think that's correct, because if you look at steel shot versus lead shot, it's about twice or three times as much. Some are even more than that. Some are even five times as much. And all you have to do is go down to Bi-Mart and look at them on the shelf. And I agree why we did the ban on shotguns for waterfowl, migratory waterfowl. What does a duck do? A duck, it's a puddler. It turns upside down and it sifts through the grass and eats grass. Well, I can understand how they'd pick that up. I agree with that 100%.
Chair Witt, Representative Esquivel, my dad made the point of telling me that the price differential has made him a much better shot.
Well, I'd have to get sucking on my house.
But
that leaves you out then, I'm afraid.
I think my point is this. On your average deer hunting trip, you know, you're going to discharge your weapon hopefully only once. You know, maybe twice. And you know, when you look at the overall cost of a, let's say, a deer hunting trip or an elk hunting trip, the price of ammunition, whether it's lead or non-lead, is a very, very small piece of that cost. And you know, we believe, given the environmental hazards of lead ammunition, that it's a cost that should be borne.
Representative Gorsuch, please.
End of the bill, Scott. Thank you, Mr. Chair. To go back to some of the previous testimony, there was an indication from some of the folks that talked about hunting that there is rarely any bullet left in the environment or in the carcass of animals that they hunt. What would be your response to that?
Well, thank you, Representative Witt, and or Chair Witt and Representative Gorsuch. You know, I heard the conversation about, you know, the offal and the presence of lead fragments. And, you know, I know that when I shot my deer and my elk, you know, I was aiming for the heart. And, you know, so lead fragments are, even a well-placed shot, lead fragments are going into lungs and organs that are not necessarily going to be packed out, that are going to be left behind. And the problem is that even a small amount of lead, and you heard Senator Steiner Hayward's testimony that lead fragments can be found as far as 18 inches away from the wound channel. Even a small amount of lead in a gut pile can pose a risk of toxic lead poisoning to a scavenger or an animal that happens to eat it. So I think it's, it's a risk that needs to be addressed, and that's why we support the phase-out of lead ammunition.
Okay. Follow-up?
Please.
Could it also be, so taking that piece, is it also possible, especially some of the descriptions of things like bald eagles being wounded, is it possible, too, that we're dealing with a whole other issue, which is poachers shooting animals and leaving them for dead, and then that adds to the problem in terms of lead being dumped in the environment?
Is that a question for
me?
Chair Witt and Representative Gorsuch, yes. I mean, we know that it is impossible even for the very best marksman to control what happens to lead fragments, and we know that poachers do kill a significant number of animals, and whether or not they use lead ammunition or not, I don't know if that has been studied. I personally don't know the answer to that question, but I mean, even we know that among responsible hunters, there is a certain percentage of animals that are wounded and not found. And those animals, if they've been shot with lead ammunition, are going to pose a serious risk to any predator or scavenger that happens to come across and eat them.
One more?
Please.
For anybody on the panel, but probably for you, Scott. So in terms of the questions that came up about condors, what would be, let's say it's not the bullet, what would be another potential source for lead being ingested by birds like that?
Landfills.
Can you think? I mean, I can't think of anything, so I'm not sure.
Chair Witt, Representative Gorsuch, I'm not a wildlife biologist. Okay. I know that the argument has been made that perhaps condors are getting toxic lead from other sources, but we also know that lead ammunition in hunting is the largest source of unregulated lead in the natural environment, and so it certainly, makes sense that especially since they're scavengers and they're eating the offal of animals that have been hunted, that ingestion of lead that has been discharged by hunters is the most, by far, the most likely source of lead poisoning.
Just thank you. Mr. Chair, the only thing this kind of reminds me of is the problem with salmon in Alaska, where they ingest mercury out in the ocean and then go back in migration into some very pristine areas, die, and then deposit that material. So I can see where we would be concerned about that or this sort of thing in terms of a relatively bad element being left out there.
Chair Witt, Representative Gorsuch, which I think is why it's important that we get biologists to study what's going on here and make policy based on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel, did you?
Yeah, real quick, I've asked Stan Steele to send each and every one of us the study that was done by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife on the condor, because they did a study after the ban on lead in California, and they found out that the toxic levels in the condor remained the same or even grew higher. So I asked for that to be sent to every one of us.
Thank you.
Can I briefly address that, Chair Witt? Please. Representative Esquivel, the ban, I'd like to talk to you about that maybe after the hearing, because the ban only hasn't even taken effect yet. It's a 5-year phase out.
They so had a voluntary ban down there for quite some time.
Okay.
So that's fact.
Okay.
With that, thank you very much for your testimony. Ms. Smith, I know you had questions about the bill, and I would refer you to Representative Witsit offline here after the committee. I have still got 2 more panels to get through here today, so if everyone would please help me try and be as timely as we possibly can, I'd appreciate that. I would like to call up next, please, Al Elkins, Joe Rollator, and Bob Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, real quick, just for the record, I'd like to put on the record that we're the ones, the legislatures was the ones that passed the bill to prohibit the use of tracer ammo in the woods. It wasn't ODF&W, it was us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Al Elkins, representing the Oregon Hunters Association. We support this bill. I have testimony I won't go through. I would just like to make the comment that OHA board is science-based, makes their decisions based on science. We read a lot of subject matter related to everything from cougars to wolves to lead. After they have gone through that, they meet in formal meetings, public meetings with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife biologists who talk about those reports in relation to wildlife in Oregon and science in Oregon. And we find that our decisions are based on their input, based on their experiences in Oregon. And I think that's a very important piece of what we of how our decisions are made. I wanted to thank Representative Witsit for bringing this issue forward, and Senator Witsit, and for Representative Witsit's work with us during this week before the hearing on the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very, very much. Welcome, gentlemen.
Mr. Chair, my name is Joe Rollator. I'm here today representing Seafood Oregon, which is a coalition of the 4 ocean commodity commissions, the Salmon Commission, the Albacore Commission, the Dungeness Crab Commission, and the Oregon Trawl Commission. Section 2 of the bill refers to fishing gear, and fishing gear in the ORSs is everything that we use for commercial fishing. So I think this bill is overly broad. Okay. The commercial fishermen change their gear all the time. We change it for all kinds of reasons, for increased efficiency, for cheaper cost. And about 20 years ago, we discovered that we're overfishing some rockfish species because we'd overestimated, the scientists had overestimated their productivity. So we started working with the folks at ODF&W Marine Program, and we figured out, first of all, a way to put a camera on a net so we could figure out what the fish were doing. And then the next thing that Keith brought us was an extruder that was a metal grate that we sewed into the net that allowed the rockfish to swim out and not get stuck back down in the cod end, which is where we keep our fish. Recently, we've done the same thing with smelt. Eulacons were listed by under the Endangered Species Act. We were catching them when they were about this big, and we figured out with help from ODF&W that blue LED lights made those fish avoid our nets. So we're doing this stuff all the time, and I would appreciate it if you would exempt commercial fishing gear from this bill. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yes, Representative Whitsitt, please.
Yes, I appreciate that, and that was not our intent to regulate the commercial fishing industry. So we will make sure that there is an amendment excluding commercial fishing from the legislature regulating it, which is what I think you're asking for, because it's in such flux, and the ODF&W, is that what you're asking?
Chair Witt, Representative Whitsitt, yes, that's correct. And I have to fess up here. I was involved in drafting this bill, and I missed that. I was reviewing it, and it just didn't occur to me that fishing gear was commercial gear, and that the folks that were working on it didn't intend to restrict commercial fishing gear. So thank you very much, Representative Whitsitt.
Joe, we provide absolution for all sins here in this committee. Your penance, penance, sir, will
what
be
is
to
my penance?
Another work group.
Wow,
that's brutal.
He's tough.
I'm certainly willing to accept that penance, Father. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Bob, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Witt, committee members. Bob Olson with Northwest Steelheaders. The Steelheaders have not taken a position on the first rough draft version of this bill. It's clear that there's some confusion on the broad language in the bill. My own view is that the ODFW Commission should have the first frontline responsibility for handling complicated and changing issues like the one being dealt with here. And of course, if there is a problem with a public perception, they tend to come up here eventually, and that is sometimes appropriate too. So that's the way things often work, and that's kind of my background. But thank you for giving this important issue some attention today.
Thank you very, very much. Committee members, if there's anything pressing, I've still got a panel and a half to go. So thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it. With that, I'd like to call up, please, Roger Beyer and Kevin Sterrett. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to our committee.
Good morning. For the record, Kevin Sterrett, Oregon Firearms Federation. I know we don't have a lot of time, but obviously we support the bill as far as its regulation of ammo, particularly now that the ATF and the Obama administration are trying to ban other kinds of conventional ammunition. So If we are able to ban lead through this and conventional ammo for other reasons, then obviously the end result is no ammo. And I just want to say that, you know, we hear a lot about science here, and our science is always the only science, and there are things that just can't be questioned. And this is a lot of things here in this building, where if you question somebody's science, you're some kind of backsliding apostate. And I really don't think that these decisions should be made, quite frankly, on a brief Google search, because whatever science you come up with, somebody's going to come up with the science that opposes that. And I think it's entirely appropriate that this legislature make these kind of decisions, because the fact is that all of this stuff can be argued, and this is the most appropriate and most transparent place for these decisions to be made.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer here, representing the National Rifle Association. We do support this legislation. Appreciate Representative Whitsitt bringing it forward. I'd just like to point out there's been a lot of points made already today, so I'll be very brief. The legislature created ODFW. and should be setting the policy for ODFW. And this bill is not granting you authority you don't already have. This body already has the authority to regulate lead ammunition. It simply restricts the other agencies. And another concern we have is that currently in this session there is a bill, Senate Bill 24, which sets up a task force to look at the consolidation of natural resource agencies. This is, I believe, the third session in a row we have had such bills to consolidate natural resource agencies. We are currently more comfortable with ODFW being a standalone agency driven by a commission appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate that has expertise in these sorts of issues. But if by some chance the legislature chose to consolidate natural resource agencies and fish and wildlife policy becomes part of a great big natural resource agency, we are afraid they would lose the expertise and it would become less transparent in a process. And we believe the transparency of the legislature is the proper place for this sort of policy discussion. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very, very much. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning again. Chair Witt, committee members, Jim Welsh with Oregon Cattlemen's Association. We certainly support this legislation. We definitely agree with some others that believe that this process, the legislative process, is a proper place to vet these type of policy issues, and we hope this goes forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Questions or comments for this panel? Just a couple of very quick ones, if we can. Principally, Roger and Kevin, your organizations know about ballistics as well as anyone else. The typical hunting bullet, do I go with a fragmentation type of bullet, or do I go with one that pulls itself together, and why?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that question. The typical hunting bullet, hunters strive to have as much of the bullet maintained in a single projectile as possible. Hunters traditionally spend extra money to get those kind of bullets. In fact, many hunters will say any bullet they find in their animal is a bullet that failed. Because the attempt is that you want the projectile to go clear through the animal and exit to do mass amounts of damage and kill quickly.
Thank you. Kevin, anything to add?
Just what we mentioned in the interim committee, that in fact people go way out of their way to create bullets that fragment for reasons that are never used for hunting, and that a bullet that maintains its mass and its solidity is a lot more valuable in terms of knocking down game animal than something that falls apart.
Thank you very much. Any additional questions or comments, Representative Escobar?
Comment on that. You wouldn't use an XTP to go out and hunt any animal, because that's a hollow point. What you want penetration and something to push through the animal and mushroom back with less loss of any lead and or jacket. Okay.
Very good. Representative Barreto.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I would just add to that Barnes Bullets was the ones that started the all-copper bullet. They've just recently sold to Remington, and Nosler is also developing theirs. So if you leave some of these things to the free market, you do have that option. So
thank you very much. Gentlemen, appreciate your testimony. Thank you. Folks, due to technical difficulties, we got a 15-minute late start. I have two more people. I'm going to bring them up. If everybody will bear with me here, we're going to get through the entire witness panel. I'd like to call up, please, Bob Salinger and Brian Posowitz. Good morning, gentlemen. Welcome to our committee.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I appreciate you staying long. My name is Bob Salinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland. I'm here representing Audubon and our 14,000 members this morning. We do not have an anti-hunting agenda. We were founded by a hunter. We do, however, believe that the use of lead shot should be restricted as much as possible in the environment. This is not the time to restrict discussion about this issue. It's time to expand it. In fact, it's long overdue, and we see this bill as restricting that opportunity. ODFNW has long regulated ammunition and fishing gear. We think they should continue to do that. They should have this discussion. It has already been stated they should be the front lines on this discussion. They are the science body that can start to really delve into this, and the legislature can weigh in later as well. But we think it's proper for ODFNW to retain that authority. We do think the bill is overbroad. It captures a lot more than simply lead, which seems to be the target of this discussion this morning, so I'd add that as well. We have banned lead in gasoline, in pencils, in paint, in pipes, and in every single case, we did that because we know that lead is poison. We've known it for a long time, and there's always been a vested constituency that has fought back and said the science is not good enough. We have to wait. We have to study it more. As far as the impacts on wildlife, there is a tremendous body of science. This has already been articulated by Representative Frederick. Peer-reviewed science that is unequivocal on the impacts on wildlife. The junk science is on the other side, folks. The science on the impacts of lead is tremendous. And as far as California condors go, it's been studied. It's been shown to be the number one cause impeding recovery. And they've done radioisotope studies that show that it is, in fact, bullets that is causing that poisoning. So we would encourage you to not support this bill. I can speak for Audubon specifically. We see the impacts of lead in our wildlife rehab center. Rehab centers see it across the state. We see golden eagles, bald eagles, red-tailed hawks, ravens, vultures, a tremendous variety of wildlife. Over 60 species have been documented with secondary lead poisoning coming from carcasses that have been left out in the environment. And we just see the tip of the iceberg because you don't find most of those dead animals that are impacted by secondary poisoning. And the vast majority don't get tested because it's very expensive. So we see a very small sample size of a much bigger problem. The last thing I would add is we often hear when we're dealing with wildlife hazards, what about buildings? What about windmills? What about cats? What about all these other hazards that are out there? They're all real. And at Audubon and other environmental organizations, we have programs to try and address all of those. But that shouldn't be a reason not to address this issue. It shouldn't be, let's look over there rather than over here. Let's look at all of these things. And today we're here to discuss lead. Again, we think ODFNW is the right place to begin this discussion. They've regulated ammunition for a long time. There was no problem with that until the lead issue came up. We think they should take the first crack at this as well. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Witt and members of the committee. My name is Brian Posowitz, and I am here today on behalf of a new organization called Humane Oregon. And thank you for agreeing to go a little over the allotted time here. I'm going to depart from my prepared remarks and just try to make a couple of quick points.
Thank you.
Our organization, and just by way of personal background, I admittedly don't hunt and fish these days, although I have done a lot of that in my younger years, and I'm pretty familiar with these issues. I talk to a lot of people who hunt. I talk to a lot of people who know the science of lead in the ammunition, and I think there is a real issue there. I won't, claim to know the science backward and forward, but I think there is an issue there for sure. The key question here today is who ought to be deciding whether there is some regulation of lead ammunition and fishing tackle, And it seems to me I'm here to basically agree with the point that in the first instance, it seems to me that should be made at the administrative level with the administrative agency. And I think the reasons for that is that there has been, I think it's fair to say, historically a deference to the agency to translate complicated scientific questions into particular hunting and fishing regulations. And I don't see this issue as setting forth real clear reasons to depart from that deference. And I think the arguments in favor of that would be that an administrative body is specialized in dealing with hunting and fishing issues. I think they perhaps have more expertise to look at the issue in the first instance. They also have a big paid staff of wildlife experts that can assist them in that inquiry. And I will say, as a lawyer, I've interacted with the administrative process. I don't find it to be lacking in notice or transparency. I think it's an open and fair process. And finally, I think it's important to note that if somebody does think the agency oversteps its bounds or does something unjustifiable, the legislature can always intervene later. But I just think a complicated scientific question like this should be addressed, at least in the first instance, at the administrative level. Thank you.
Thank you very much. questions or comments for this panel, Representative Esquivel?
I think that's exactly what we're doing here today, is we're getting a bill that has to do with regulation. We're the ones that set the policy. They don't.
Additional questions or comments? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you very, very much. I want to thank the audience as well as the committee for bearing with me, making it possible for us to get through every witness today. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2503. I'm going to close the public hearing.